Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
The blood washed away, but the guilt never does. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott.
Well, the new year has certainly started off very eventful with the New Orleans terrorist attack and also what seems to look more and more to be related, the Cybertruck explosion at the Trump Las Vegas Hotel, right in the entryway there. Which, incidentally, we were standing there picking up a cab earlier this year. We were at the mall right next door, and that was just where the Uber went to. And I was like, oh, my God, we were right there. It's kind of disturbing. Joining me to discuss all of this, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author of the book, The Minds of Mass Killers. Get it wherever you get books. And I thought of you right away on this one because this is another mass killer situation. I'm just going to open it up to you. What was your initial thoughts here as these stories started coming in over the last handful of days?
Yeah, somebody wants to give us a message, right? Which is why we call it terrorism, because it terrorizes the population. And with this kind of extremist ideology, which was discovered pretty much right away in New Orleans, there's a clear message that someone, and often it's a group of someone's, even if that individual is not meeting up in person with the group, they're radicalized online most of the time. And it's usually a younger male who has a lot of anger. There's not classic mental illness, but this ideology takes on a paranoid thinking quality in their mind, and it becomes a rationale for their anger. And the more they immerse themselves in it, they become angrier and angrier, and they start this us and them kind of thinking distortion that they are the holy warriors and they're willing to sacrifice their lives for a cause. So there's an element of grandiosity and that look at me as I do something incredibly wonderful. And they celebrate it when other people do these kinds of things. But there's not typically the kind of criminal history that you would see with somebody who's, you know, a psychopath or something like that. The other thing that's really interesting about these guys, I have a whole chapter on extremist mass killers in my book.
Yeah.
Is that you find them from the political far right, you find them from the political far left, you can find them with Christian ideologies. I think of the Daybells, you know, who were in their mind directed by God to kill innocent people and children. And a couple of examples that come to mind were Ted Kaczynski, who was deadly and did so much carnage, and he identified as being far left. And then you had Tim McVeigh, notorious, who identified as being far right, both white guys. And you find this similar psychological process. Oh, white supremacists. A lot of the people who commit these things are white supremacists. And so, you know, what has the flavor of a religion? Sometimes it's more secular and more political, but the politics and the religion often get mixed together. And there's nothing, I don't think, as dangerous as a holy warrior.
And what's interesting about this one, I mean, Timothy McVeigh would have been similar. He's a former military and such. These two, both of them from both of Las Vegas and from the New Orleans, both former military folks, U.S. Army, both U.S. Army, actually. And what we're learning now is there's some overlap of time where they both served at the same place at the same time. And as of our recording, there's a lot of research going into that right now. As of this moment, we just don't know whether that overlapping service at Fort Bragg indicates some sort of connection. I would say it would be very shocking if it did not, the coincidence that this all kind of puts together. But the fact that these two guys are American citizens, one in Texas, the other in Colorado Springs, Colorado, both, you know, have lived their lives here in the country. The one from New Orleans, where obviously there was far more carnage, spent 10 years in the Army, has two kids, some failed divorces, failed marriages, twice divorced, financial difficulties, living in squalor, basically, as I've heard a lot of publications call it out. When they're from here, this is very different than like a 9/11 type terrorist. This is someone who has been, indoctrinated into some sort of ideology, but these were American citizens. These are American citizens who invested a good chunk of their life into their country, in service of their country. I think a lot of people's heads kind of spin going, how did we go from that to this?
Yeah. And this is something that's not commonly understood. I think I go over the data to some degree in the book. But a lot of mass killers, often the shooters, have a military history, mm-hmm. which is why they're so comfortable with firearms. And often in the lives of, you know, the teenage mass killers, the school shooters, they often have a parent with a military history. So there's something about the comfort with weaponry and violence and explosives. I think sometimes a person who has been increasingly radicalized through their online activities, their thinking becomes very distorted. And logically, it doesn't add up, but that's sort of the human mind. You know, they can be very emotionally driven. And here's a reason for their anger. And I think a lot of people have anger about a lot of things. And then they latch on to this belief system. And all of a sudden, they have justification for it, which feeds it. And they study other similar people online. They copycat. You know, there's patterns that you see over again. Certainly, they're not all identical. You know, you will find different life histories with them. But the psychological process is very similar, even with those in foreign countries.
I think what makes it kind of shocking is you just think about how folks grow up here in America, and you think about how folks grow up in foreign countries, specifically like Saudi Arabia and such, where we saw the 9/11 attackers, majority of them coming from. And it's obviously insanely different. One, you have cultures that really, you know, promote a level of violence. I'm not saying all as a whole. So before anybody's like, not everybody, of course they're not. But you certainly have more groups out there in the public that are accepted as basically a sect of a public group. And it's pretty large. We don't necessarily have like little, there's no ISIS coffee shops at the end of the road. You know, are there people out there who sympathize? Sure. But it's not to the level that we see mass quantities of them as we would in the Middle East and such. So to be radicalized, they go online and they begin that radicalization process. But again, what's shocking, I think, to most is the recipe that would have built somebody over there to fall in that line. I understand that a little bit more over there because it's a messed up way of thinking to begin with. So I can see how you can easily fall into that. When you're here and you've done such a chunk of your life in American society, in service to your country, to suddenly flip that around and somehow believe that the best option for whatever your cause is to go run over a bunch of drunk people on New Year's Eve. What are you demonstrating? Like what is going on in that mind that this is the religious cause or this is the solution to your problems?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not terribly rational, is it? It doesn't make sense. But culture teaches us who the enemies are. And it teaches us that there's virtue in killing the enemies. And it also shows the power of online culture. You know, that these people typically, if you trace their steps online, you'll find that they have spent years often immersed in online cultures. And of course, they're communicating with actual ISIS people in the Middle East online because these people do all find each other. We see the same thing with the incel culture. Mm-hmm. You know, you think, how can people become so warped in their perceptions that it's acceptable to just go out and try to murder a group of sorority sisters, you know, or whatever, plow into a group of women on a sidewalk, which happened in Canada. Yeah. And it's you know, we like to think, I think most of us who use online space for Facebook or showing pictures of our pets and our, you know, our vacations, it's hard to imagine somebody that goes into a hate group online. But these guys will spend hours and hours and hours in virtual spaces, and it does impact their thinking.
Why is it that we're in such a place where we have this culture of we'd rather blame somebody for all of our problems rather than cope? I mean, I feel like we are lacking coping skills dramatically in this country.
Yeah.
And we'd rather go blame. It's somebody else's fault. And it's so easy to do it online because you'll find other people who feel they've been wronged. And it just snowballs. And nobody ever wants to look at themselves and go, maybe I'm part of the problem. Or maybe something I've done put me into this position and maybe I should change some ways. So maybe I'm a happier human being. But rather, I'm just going to blame until I eventually blow up and do horrible, horrible things. That to me, I think is, you know, when we go more of a 10,000 foot level on this, that seems to be take religious ideology out of it because it could be ISIS, it could be incel, it could be whatever you feel the world has done to you that was a wrong. And then they go into these obsessive tendencies and then that's just where they sit. That's something that feels like it's changed in our culture over the last 20, 30 years where personal responsibility doesn't seem to exist that much. And we don't really ask it out of others as well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's this tendency to put the blame external all the time. And I do think there's been a cultural shift in that way. And again, they get in these online groups where it's all about us versus them, the holy people versus the unholy people. And it is a dramatically warped way of processing the world.
Yeah, these folks, and obviously we're just kind of speculating right here, there's a difference between, it feels like these two and like a Luigi Mangione. Luigi Mangione survived the United Healthcare shooting. He went on the run and then they got him. So he's able to sit there and smirk in court and, you know, be the narcissistic asshole that he is. But with these two, they died. That's where it kind of strikes similarities to more of like the 9/11 hijackers and such. They knew it was over. And I'm going to assume these two probably knew it was over as well, considering one sat in the truck when it blew up and the other one was in the truck kind of knowing eventually this is not going to work out. Is that grandiose? Is that look at me? Or is that, I mean, what is that?
I think the difference is, the culture that they were immersed in, you know, often in Arab countries after there has been an ISIS attack, they share pictures of the murderers and they venerate them. And so there's this public, you know, what would we call it, worship that goes on. And if you have a religious belief system where you think you're going to be alive and observing this later from heaven or wherever, that, again, most of us would look at that and think, well, you know, I'm not gonna give up my life for that vision. But there's this belief system within their culture that they're going to be having a great time in heaven and watching this veneration. And so it feeds their ego in that way. And also maybe Mangione was a bit smarter. You know, and had a different vision for how he thought he could make this turn out.
Yeah, I guess when you have the vision that death is going to be better than life.
Yes.
That kind of explains a lot of it. And if your life is so horrible, I mean, that's suicide, you know, sometimes where it's well, this will be, at least I won't be in pain. I'll be better somewhere else.
Right. Right.
But I guess it's a way of them looking at this as I'm not just going out, you know, on my own. I'm going out and I'm doing it for a cause, and it's going to be going to be more grandiose. Surprise. It's not.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But that's a surprise. It seems that none of them really can quite grasp.
Yeah, it's you know, I feel like I'm consistently confronted with the non-rational nature of most of humanity. And some of us have little moments of irrationality, but there are whole, you know, large groups of people who find each other and their thinking just veers off in ways that make no sense.
Yeah. Obviously, far more questions than we're ever going to have answers on people like this. We'll never really truly have answers because it's hard to get into the mind of somebody like that. But obviously, it keeps going, and there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of slowdown. Is there any way, I mean, when you look at something like this, I mean, this stuff just continues to get more and more rampant. Obviously, other countries have seen more of this than we have in the last several decades, but we're starting to see far more of it here. How do you get ahead of this? How do you break this? How do you, you know, especially with a culture that is not here, that we don't have a lot of control over, and, you know, a world that can communicate to any place in it at any point in time?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, the big place I see to intervene is coming up with ways to monitor people online. And I know that the FBI is trying to do that, you know, sending, you know, undercover people online into some of these spaces. I think it's happening particularly in this country now with, you know, the white supremacy groups. And so trying to catch it early, trying, you know, because a lot of these people do telegraph online, you know, as the one in New Orleans apparently posted videos indicating what he was going to do. And so I think we have to empower law enforcement to investigate these groups in these spaces, as they've done with the KKK in the past. And we need to try to catch it on the pathway to violence. There's always that pathway where it starts with this collection of grievances, this immersion into ideology, the then focusing obsessively on the planning, and then ultimately the steps that they take to the actual attack. And so you want to interrupt it as soon on the path as you can. And I think that's going to involve law enforcement and, you know, going undercover and trying to find these things. That's another thing that often doesn't hit the news, how many attacks are interrupted. And I think we have to give credit when that happens. And we probably don't give enough credit to that. But yes, many of them do get interrupted beforehand. But it doesn't bode well for the new year. It's an unsettling way to start.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in. And then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.